Well, now we're staying with crime and prisons. I'm joined by Derva MacDonald, who's legal affairs editor with the Irish Independent. Derva, we're going to talk about the sentencing of former junior minister Ivor Callaly in just a moment. But before we do that, you're also writing in your own paper, the Irish Independent, today about the Toland report. Might just go back to that text we had in from Philip in Dublin 15. Transparency, accountability, new politics. That's a quote from Enda Kenny. Another quote from Enda Kenny, Paddy likes to know what the story is. He's saying Enda Kenny now needs to tell us what happens that night.
You reckon? There's a very interesting debate, and I asked Justice Minister Francis Fitzgerald this last week. You know, is there really any barrier to Enda Kenny coming out and giving a simple explanation for what happened on that night, that Martin Callan resigned, retired, was encouraged to go, whatever phrase you want to use, he departed in any event. And obviously there are certain matters that are being inquired into by the Fennelly inquiry, but I don't personally think that there is any barrier. He is the Taoiseach of the country. I don't think any inquiry would be compromised by coming out and giving a very, very, very simple explanation to people. And I think that we deserve that.
Do you think he will do it?
No, I don't think he will. I just don't think it is worth the political trouble for him to do so. And it was something that was raised at the McGill School, Summer School, by former Justice Minister and Attorney General Michael McDowell. You know, he again said he didn't see why there was any reason why the Taoiseach couldn't, you know. And really, you know, we're talking about accountability in politics. We don't need a big, you know, I'm sure any statement would be carefully abled by lawyers, you know, to make sure that any inquiry or any boundaries weren't being crossed. But I think the Taoiseach can give a very simple explanation and should, in my view, give a very simple explanation as to what happened on that night. It matters. The Toland review is outstanding, I think, for its brevity and its clarity, much like the Geoghegan report, which has been subject to some criticism, in particular by former Justice Minister Alan Shatter, who has been sort of a crying into the wind, albeit under dull privilege, about that report. Both the authors of those reports went in with a very tight remit and a very, very short period of time. And yet it's amazing what a little, just a flourish of independence can do, because the Toland Review in particular just went to the heart, in my view, of the very real problems, and not just created in the short lifetime of this government. This is going back decades.
We heard John Lonergan talking about it earlier.
The secrecy, the culture around that, and in a country that has been in a near permanent state of emergency since 1939, which has introduced a lot of special powers and emergency legislation, you can appreciate the need for secrecy at some level. But I think that the Toland Review really, really cuts into the heart of the extreme nature and the unnecessary nature of the secrecy at the heart of a government department that should be publicly accountable. And really, what it really raises for me is, what are we going to do about security and intelligence? The review recommends splitting the Justice Department, in effect, into a Justice and a Home Affairs Division. And I think that this issue of the Department of Justice, you know, kind of as meant to be in full oversight of the Gardaí, and actually what it shows is that when it comes to political oversight, the Gardaí have traditionally and still are essentially a law unto themselves when it comes to political oversight. The 2005 Act, brought in after the Morris Tribunal, has been diluted in its implementation. That really, when it comes to issues such as discipline, etc., within the Gardaí, that they're kind of out there on their own. But I think a key issue for this government is, what are we going to do about the fact that in the north and in elsewhere, where they have independent policing authorities, which is the central, this is going to be the jewel and the crown of policing reform in Ireland. How do you divide up that very sensitive issue of day-to-day policing versus intelligence? Because we're not like America with the CIA. We're not like the UK, which has MI5, MI6. So how do you separate that intelligence and security function from the ordinary day-to-day management? And I think that's a key issue. And if you look very carefully at the report, the Toland Review is only 22 pages, well worth a look, even if it's only over a cup of coffee, to see some of the recommendations that they make in that regard. But I have to say that it was refreshing. But what it also did, and I'm sometimes critical of the Department of Justice, but what it also shows is how much not just this department but others have been ravaged by the effects of the financial crisis, because what it points to is that loss of institutional intelligence, corporate experience, with the departure of so many senior ranking officials, people who've been there for a long time. Now, you see that in the public and private sector, but you can see just in terms of where leadership, oversight and other issues such as management have fallen down, that in large part it's due to that. And the report praises the lawyers loyalty and dedication of justice staff, but really, how do you go about and change that culture? A big challenge for Francis Fitzgerald
In less than 18 months, that is the key issue, isn't it, with an election ahead of her? Is it really likely that she's going to be able to achieve anything?
You know, and there are so many factors. It's a funny thing. What I noted this morning is that, you know, it remains to be seen whether there'll be broad political or public support, because we're quite funny when it comes to reform. We're supportive of it in the main, but it comes down to the nitty gritty of doing that. That's going to be a really, really big challenge. And also just with respect to an Garda Síochána, you know, talking about really how the support for institutions such as GSOC and the Garda Inspectorate, really that support waned over time. And there are major, major challenges there for Francis Fitzgerald and her officials.
Any idea who the next Secretary General is likely to be, or where would they even start looking?
I don't, but what we do know is that it's going to be subject to open recruitment. So that will be quite interesting to see how that falls. It's interesting as well that there was no really sticking in of the knife into Brian Purcell, the current Secretary General, not least because of his own history and including taking a bullet from the General, etc. Mm. But he's going to be moving on. But it's not down to one man or one person. There are decades of a culture, and how do you reform that? It'll take a lot longer than 18 months, I suspect.
Massive task. Listen, let's move on to Ivor Callaly. You've written quite a lot about that today as well. But, you know, you describe the sentence as being a reminder that trust in public office does matter, because we're not talking about a huge amount of money here. You know, it's not like he went out and took it out of individuals. It seems to have been fiddling expenses.
Yeah, look, I mean, if you look at the details of Ivor Callaly's crime, it seems quite unsophisticated and ham-fisted. And it's something that Michael O'Higgins, senior counsel, his defence lawyer, was saying yesterday, look, the press benches wouldn't be this full if it was an ordinary person who'd stolen €4,000. The scale of the fraud isn't all that big. But Ivor Callaly wasn't just an ordinary person. He was a former, twice a junior minister, a very senior politician at the time of these alleged offences. He was in the Shannon at the time. But really, that what the sentencing judge Mary Ellen Ring did, she adjourned the sentencing to take legal submissions on this whole issue of a breach of trust by a person holding a position of trust. And really, that's what led to a custodial sentence.
And is that fair, do you think? I mean, because as you say, most people who stole €4,000 or who came about it, whatever, it's unlikely they would have gone to prison for it.
And this is it. It was one of the key issues that was explored. Obviously, we don't have politicians coming before the courts all that often. And where they have been jailed, it's been for what we might maybe say for more serious offences. So if we look back at Ray Burke, former Fianna Fáil minister and TD, jailed in 2005 for 6 months for breaches of the tax code. And I think that it is arguable, as Ivor Callaly's lawyer submitted, that that's in a different league to
Ivor Callaly. And in fairness to Ivor Callaly, he also gave the money back when he heard that it was being FOI'd, I think, was it?
Well, when he heard there was an FOI, he kind of went back and tried to fix it too late at that stage. And, you know, he is a man of great conviction, but of no previous convictions. And he had, in fact, paid all back except €500 of that.
And, Derva, where is he now? I mean, he would have been sentenced in court yesterday. What happens then? He's taken to Mountjoy,
is he normally? Like most prisoners who are convicted, people who are processed in the Dublin region, he would have gone to Mountjoy, assigned his number, placed in a cell. It's quite possible that he will stay in the training unit at Mountjoy.
That's kind of the drug-free unit.
In Mountjoy. And his lawyers had argued, saying, look, you know, you can't afford him a special status just because he is was an elected official. So I'm sure that whatever requirements are needed to protect him as a prisoner will be brought to bear in that regard. But it's interesting that since the collapse of, in all but name, of the banking system, we've had a number of people who've come before the courts, people who have held positions of trust. So just a number of years ago, we had the first ever judge convicted of a serious crime, Heather Perrin, recently released, who was sent to jail for theft and deception charges while she was a solicitor. We've had a number of solicitors in particular coming before the courts, including Thomas Byrne and Rory O'Callaghan. Both are serving quite a significant jail term. terms for their offences. And in what I've kind of noticed as a trend in each of these cases is that the sentencing judges do take into account the position of trust that that these people hold. And, you know, when we think about trust in public office or trust in the professions, you know, sometimes we can be a bit devil may care about it. But in fact, I think what these series of cases has shown is that it does matter. We can put a value on it. And when that trust is broken, we can also put a penalty on it.
OK, well, Dervin MacDonald, thank you very much indeed for coming in to us this morning.